Literally. And
introing it for the fourth time.
I thought I saw a man brought to life. He was warm, he came around like he was dignified.
See, I think that this is the one that finally splits us.
Yes, we'll see.
We'll get into it, but I get the feeling that this is the one that cuts us down the middle.
Oh boy. Song is hard to...
Too real?
Hard to listen to.
Cuts pretty deep, I know.
Ooh, that bass is moving pretty nasty underneath though.
The best part.
I'm already torn.
God damn.
So I guess the fortune teller's right. I should have seen just what was there and not some holy light. But you crawled beneath my veins and now I don't care. I have no luck. I don't miss it all that much.
Debut single, track one off of the debut album.
I feel like the enthusiasm is a little bit less this week.
I mean, this song sucks.
Okay.
It's just, it's hard. It's hard to listen to. It's like...
Really? I quite like this song. I think you knew I did.
Well, I'm ready and raring to discuss it.
Hard to listen to. Okay.
I mean, I do. You know, I'm not gonna lie. I got a little bit of piss and vinegar in my veins right now. But like,
yeah, you got a computer out for once. You must have some hot takes on there.
Oh, we've got some talking points.
Got some talking points. Okay. I'm itching and ready for the song to be done. So I got an intro.
Oh yeah, that's right.
I got the intro. I got some. We're ready. We're ready this week. Episode 5. This is a new show.
The most interesting part, I think, is when that, like,
that little part right there
comes in, and then they do a fade out on it. I mean,
yeah. And there it is, the 1997 hit "Torn" by Natalie Imbruglia. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of One Hit Wonderful World, where we shine a weekly spotlight on a band or artist known primarily for a single track and ask the question, should we have kept listening? My name is Cody Nelson, alongside my close friend and co-host Kyle Kimblin. Hello, Kyle.
Hey!
And this episode is all about the woman who sings Torn, Natalie Imbruglia. We're going to talk about her career at large. We're going to talk about her hit, released in 1997 on her debut album Left of the Middle. And as always, we're going to talk about her follow-up, the album she made after Left of the Middle, 2001's White Lily's Island. So, this ends up pretty album-heavy. Kyle and I have both listened to the album in full twice. I've listened to it 3 times.
Oh, wow.
So for your enjoyment's sake, we suggest you listen to It's Not Mandatory. We'll play clips of tracks here and there as we go to help you all follow along. But the album is readily available on both Apple Music and Spotify. So we recommend you at least skip around to get a feel for the thing. Intro over, what are your thoughts?
On Torn or the
album? On my intro.
Oh, the intro is wonderful.
Yeah, if you guys have any thoughts on the intro, onehitwonderfulworld@gmail.com. Still have not gotten an email.
Not a single
Who is going to pick up that baton and reach out?
I must have spelled it wrong.
Yeah. So there's one thing I feel we need to talk about before we start talking about the song.
Okay.
Because she has had another song chart in the U.S., and I let it this happened again.
What song is that?
Wrong Impression, track 5, which, don't say anything, we'll get into it. But we find ourselves again at the crossroads of One Hit Wonder versus Signature Song. So here's how I feel. I'm just going to say this once so we can get out of the way. I feel like One Hit Wonder maybe is a bit extreme in the name. To me, if you were to just go up to somebody and be like, quick, name a song by this artist, and their gut is to go to that one song every time, I think that counts. You know?
I think this counts because we're going to talk about Wrong Impression later.
Okay.
But it's Torn. I mean, it's Torn.
Torn is definitely the hit.
So yeah, let's talk about Torn a little bit.
I want to know what you think about it in one word.
In one word.
Yeah.
Hyphenated, radio friendly.
All right, loophole, I dig it. Yeah, that counts.
But you?
Ooh, this is gonna be. No, that's too extreme of a word. Timeless. No. No, that's not it. That's not what I mean.
No, it's not timeless.
It's not timeless. Good.
Wow. Yep. Large.
I think it's a good song. I, for whatever reason, I've always kind of, like, enjoyed one-hit wonders and thought they were an entertaining thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this was always one that stuck with me. This one and Save Tonight are, like, the two that I genuinely have always enjoyed.
I mean, we've kind of talked about it before. It, to me, it's very dated. It's, like, it's late 90s. So, like, this is so similar to anything else you would have heard on the radio.
Do you like Stay, I Missed You by Lisa Loeb?
I don't recall exactly how that one goes, I guess.
You say,
yeah.
I don't hear what I want to. To me, like, this song and that song are twins. You know?
That, I think, has more character to it, frankly.
Yeah, maybe you're right.
So, this is actually a cover.
Yeah, I thought that was really weird.
Of a band, of a song by a band called Edna Swap.
Did you listen to their version?
I did.
I didn't.
I did. They're really similar. Edna Swap's got a little, like, rougher edge to it.
Okay. A rougher edge that we're going to find is hanging out in some parts of White Lily's Island.
You think so?
Yeah. Wow.
Interesting that you should say that.
Oh, we'll get into it.
Yeah, we will.
But yeah, so Edna Swap, looks like their version of it didn't make much of a splash. I always find that very interesting when the original version doesn't, like, do much as far as popularity, but then gets covered a ton and just gets bigger than the original version.
Right. Well, so, like, where did Natalie Imbruglia stumble upon it and go, yes, this is the one? Or probably a more accurate question, where did her producers stumble upon it and decide?
Well, it looks like she is definitely a co-writer on just about all of her songs.
Really? Oh, so she's just got a...
Yeah, it looks like she's worked a lot with this one guy. What is his name? Gary Clark?
Mm.
Not Gary Clark Jr.'s dad. I looked into that. But, yeah. She's kind of had an interesting career. She sort of just did music when she wanted to, and then switched to movies and acted for, like, 4 or 5 years, was successful at that, and then came back to music and just did music again. She was married to the guy from Silverchair, which I didn't know.
That's right. Well, let's be clear, though, because she was an actor first. She was in
Neighbours,
an Australian soap opera.
Yeah.
And then she decided to do music. So, you know, and we'll start talking about it later, but Natalie Imbruglia In what facets does her star shine to you? Is she a musician? Is she an actor?
I don't know if I would consider her a musician. I mean, she's a musician. She's a singer. I don't know what role she has played in the writing of her songs. My guess is probably the lyrics.
Right.
I think she has a really good voice, and
she does.
That is the biggest takeaway I had from this album. I like a lot of the album. Quite a bit, actually. Genuinely. And I expected to. I mean, this is kind of right up my alley. But a lot of it gets very cheesy. A lot of it gets kind of melodramatic.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
But what saves me in those moments from hating it is her voice. I think she sings all of this record very well.
All right. She's got a good voice.
And I didn't listen to the first album, but I think she has a good voice on Torn. I don't know. She just has, like, a really aesthetically pleasing tone. I wouldn't say it's the most original voice in the world, but it is easy to listen to.
Yep. So do you think she is a made pop star, or do you think she...
You know what it is? If I was told that this was how it went, I wouldn't be surprised. I feel like certain musicians, when they hit a level of fame, they're like, I'm going to act now. And they just can because of how famous they got at music.
Right.
And, like, actors are, like, the same way with music.
Right.
You see it a lot with exiting Disney Channel stars, I've found, and vice versa.
Right.
I would not be surprised if this was a situation like that. Not invalidating her music career in any way, which is relatively successful in a number of countries.
Sure.
But I wouldn't be surprised if that was how it started. I mean, it started with a cover. She probably didn't have any music written. She probably just liked that song and had the star power to say, I'm going to do it.
I wish I could, you know, turn back the clock to 1997 and see what it was, take the temperature then. I'm not really, you know, I mean, I didn't research it because we're mostly talking about her follow-up album, but...
Yeah, which, I mean, I think that in and of itself is a testament to her musical career. If she was really just a flash-in-the-pan actor that wanted to try music, it would have just been the one record.
Right, and it, yeah, exactly. That's a fair point. I do think, honestly, it's important to say that she is very attractive. And the reason that I think it's important to say that is because, one, she started out as an actor on this soap opera, and two, I don't know if you noticed, but some of the lyrics on White Lily's Island actually, like, refer, she, like, is aware
yeah.
of how attractive she is and, like, writes from, well, you know, her own perspective, but, like, taking that into account and using that as a springboard and her experiences, like, with that.
Using it as a springboard to explore a lyrical gamut that I was not expecting.
Exactly.
And that is on me.
Yeah.
I was very prejudicial about what I was in for, and I was pleasantly surprised. A lot of dark stuff.
Well, yeah, yeah. See, it's melodramatic, though. Some of it's not. Oh, okay.
I thought. Before we dive into that, so White Lily's Island was released on November 5th, 2001 in Europe and Australia, but not until March 5th, 2002 in the U.S. I thought this would be fun to do other albums that were released on March 5th, 2002.
Okay.
Reinventing Axl Rose by Against Me, The 11th Hour by Jars of Clay, and then Billy Bragg, Naughty by Nature, Ben Queller, and Black Label Society all released albums on that day.
Oof, what's the name of the Black Label Society album?
Let me check that. But this only sold 35,000 copies in the first week.
What was it? 7 million? Total it sold 7 million.
I think her first album in the U.S. is definitely platinum. Are you saying it's 7 times platinum? The Black Label Society album is called 1919 Eternal.
All right, well, I don't remember that one.
Not the most marquee week for the music industry. Against Me was not really notable yet. But yeah, so what were we talking about?
I wonder how the Ben Queller album did. You think it outperformed this? Probably.
In the U.S.?
Yeah.
Probably.
Anyway, You were just saying other albums that came out in 2002.
Yeah, I just thought that would be fun. Turns out it wasn't really, so we don't have to keep doing it.
Right. Well, I say we get into this album. Just play the first track. Play yeah. That Day.
Ugh. Can't wait to. Because this album starts easily with the worst song.
You think so?
Oh. Absolutely.
See.
Musically interesting.
I heard this and I was like, whoa, is this gonna be cool? Like,
no.
Oh. And then, yeah, like,
still.
Oh, man.
Vocally, there is not the semblance of a rhythm here.
Right, yeah, she just kind of...
She's just got a laundry list of stuff she wants to talk about. And I'm sad, 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 small, alone, scared, craving purity, a fragile mind and a gentle spirit. Not only is this track one, this was the pre-album release first single.
Really?
This was the song that they were all most confident in, and I think that's insane.
Maybe they were trying to put across a more serious vibe?
Maybe. And I mean, it's a very empowering message, lyrically. Like, I don't think it could have been sung in any other way than this. I just don't think that the music underneath it works. It's just like too completely... It never quite lines up.
If she was a little bit more... To me, if she was a little bit more yelly, a little bit more punk rock, maybe.
Yeah. It is not a strong start.
No, it's not.
I think... I always find it very funny when songs like that are placed right at the top. Because I always feel like I'm missing something, you know? I think the people that put the album together probably have more knowledge about the album than I do. So it's like, clearly you put that at number one for a reason, but to me that makes absolutely zero sense.
Okay, do you like this album?
Yeah.
Okay.
I hate that song.
I do not like this album.
Right.
I think that... As far as pop music goes, it's very well produced. It's glossy. It sounds good. The vocals are very loud up front. And you can... If you like pop music, maybe you can get down with this. I think, like, it's kind of all over the place. And I do not care for what she's really saying necessarily, just as a... taking the music as a whole.
Yeah.
I think it's really melodramatic, and I just don't like it. I don't like it.
That's fair. And I do like pop music a lot. I've always been open about that.
Yep.
But I've started to think that I definitely judge pop music differently than other genres because it is expected to be a certain thing.
Yep.
So when people are able to kind of stretch it and turn it into something original, given the fact that it has to remain this certain thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm impressed by that. And I feel like this kind of does that, or at least attempts to.
Maybe. You can say that, yeah.
I really like the parts I like, but then there are like four or five songs that I'm not super into, because I feel like at the same time, it was riding a couple waves.
Mm-hmm.
About 6 months before this came out, 7 months or so, the first Jack Johnson album came out.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And this, like, I'm going to play here. Trek.
Another one of my absolute all-time favorites.
Yeah, you've always been a big Johnson head. Okay. This is track 3, Satellite.
Oh.
From the first second, we're on Island Time. We ain't got a care in the world with this one. And going along with what you said, it is all over the place. It is a very inconsistent album, but I think pop albums are kind of by design that way. Because you bring in writers, you work with different people, they have different styles, it doesn't flow.
Yeah.
See,
okay, here's my problem with this song. Like, first of all, one of the elements that's present on this song, that's present on a lot of the other tracks, is she's got some, like, acoustic guitar, but then there's this, like, drum loop. This, like, drum machine going on.
You're saying this isn't a real guy playing the congas?
The congas might be real, probably not. But maybe, but there's definitely a drum machine in there. And there's just like drum machine all over this thing. And it's like, is this an electro album? Like, what is it? Another thing that this is super guilty of that is that lots of pop music is guilty of is like they introduce these like elements like just here and there, like just these little tidbits to keep it interesting.
We're original.
This song sucks. This song sucks really bad. No, super bad. The chorus is dumb. And then like the scatting she's doing, that. Oh my god.
It's really not a fan of the original scat.
It's so bad. Oh my god. Anyone that's like rocking out to that song, like I would need to reconsider my relationship with that person.
Yeah. Well, I'll pump the brakes a little bit then.
Oh, please. Do you have something that you'd like to say?
No, I just... I would never, like... No, I'm not going to backpedal. I like this. I like that song.
You like that song?
Yeah. I don't think that it's...
I would say that it's among the worst songs on this album.
Okay.
Probably, like, bottom...
I would say it's toward the bottom.
What? You just said you liked it.
It's all relative.
All right.
So
you really, really like a bunch of songs. You can't even decide.
Yeah, no, there are a handful of songs that I genuinely love. We'll get to that. So that song and another, there's a bunch of times where this happens. If, like, there was an episode of Felicity or Dharma and Greg where they went out to a concert and then misadventures happened, the band that would be playing, it would be, like, Natalie Imbruglia's second album. Because she's riding the torn wave. They're like, we gotta get you through the networks and play all these. Yeah, you gotta hit the Party of Five set, all these shows.
Yeah, for sure. And again, it's just dated. It's very, like, timely.
Yeah, it is very timely. To think I called Torn timeless, not but 10 minutes ago.
Well,
everybody makes mistakes.
Do you have a song that you'd like to bring up next?
Yeah, I do. So, we were talking earlier about One Hit Wonder versus Signature Song.
Yep.
At number 64 on the Hot 100, this track peaked. This is track 5, Wrong Impression.
Mm-hmm.
Great song. Again, very timely, very 90s. But this, I think, is... You know when, like, Cities 97 is on?
Yeah.
And, like, sometimes an adult contemporary song comes on, and you're like, that was good.
Yeah. Drop it out. Just bring it with that acoustic and
it's
the
just yeah, it it's hard because I can
hold on, no, this is just
stop.
Okay, yep.
Yeah, you need a moment to feel it. Yeah, let that vocal in.
Oh, please go on.
It is clear that these were written with radio in mind.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Every single one of these tracks.
Oh, 100%.
But at the same time, I don't think that's the worst thing in the world.
I think this is the song that attempts to duplicate the hit. If
because it was the
song,
second hit, yeah.
Right. But I mean, really, I think it tries to do it again. All the instrumentation is the same. We don't even have any of the... there's no drum machine. There's not really any electronic elements. There's a little bit of... Is that some kind of effecty synth pad back there? Maybe.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure. But otherwise, instrumentally, it's the same as Torn. It's got a very similar vibe. I wrote here, again, totally forgettable.
Totally forgettable. Would you use that to describe the album at large?
To describe the album at large.
Like, on the whole, is this totally forgettable?
No, because... And the only reason I say that is because Natalie Imbruglia has had a career. Like, she's got 4 albums.
Yeah.
And she's, as far as I know, still active in the music world.
Still active in the music world. Just made her theatrical debut, like, stage debut.
Right.
Like, she's killing it.
So she's around, you know? And that's the thing, like you were saying earlier, where someone achieves a certain level of star power and then they just sort of do the things that you do in the entertainment world.
Yeah.
I think that's where she's at, and she's achieved a level of star power where she's got a certain amount of staying power. Like, she's going to be able to do things until she doesn't want to do them anymore. You know, it's not going to be like the dude from Dexy's Midnight Runners, where it's
right.
Fizzled out. And I think that's indicative of a time in the music industry itself. A lot of these bands from the late 90s, early 2000s kind of have that going on because there's those tie-ins with the popular sitcoms, like you're saying, you brought up Dharma and Greg, Friends, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much media feeding off of itself and within itself, you know, that it's risen to a certain level where she's too big to fail, Natalie Imbruglia.
Natalie Imbruglia, too big to fail. You heard it here first. I also wonder, with the success that Torn has received worldwide, she, and you know what, this kind of applies to, likely, everybody we'll talk about on this show. They rightfully can sort of just continue their career indefinitely based off of the one success. Probably, to a degree.
To a degree, I would think. Well, I mean, we're kind of, I think that's still an ongoing conversation, because what happened to, well, I guess the dudes from Crazy Town are still making records, so.
I suppose. Yeah, well, I mean, their life decisions might not have been
the best track to follow. I mean, there's a certain something.
But in some cases, I bet she still sees enough cashies from Torn to, you know, keep it up. And why not? Seems like she still enjoys it.
I think she should put Edna Swap on, the original Riders of Torn, if she was any kind of good person.
Wait, bring them on an album?
Like, you throw them a bone, like, I don't know, produce their record or something. Just be a name on it. Executive executive production by Natalie Imbruglia.
The reunion the world's been waiting for. Right. Natalie Imbruglia and Edna Swap.
Anyway, could you do me a favor, please, and play Do You Love?
Oh, yeah.
All right, now, so what I noticed immediately... Hold on. That's three-bar phrasing right there.
Oh, that
is.
That's
three bars of 4/4. And that just gets me every time. And I go like, oh, cool groove, mathy. Kind of like the Pixies a little bit. It's kind of got a little, almost a Radiohead vibe a little bit. But as soon as she starts singing here, it goes completely back to 4/4, 4-bar phrasing, totally by the book.
Yep.
That intro just has a little bit of interesting irregularity to it.
It did. I didn't notice that.
This song is where I started to notice that there are, like, strings all over this record that are... Like, what I wrote is they're overwrought. They're presented way too soon before the emotional level of the songs calls for them.
Okay.
It's got, like, the bass is about to kind of pick up a little bit, get a little distortion going on, add in a little bit of edge to things, but it's just not there emotionally.
Yeah, and
like,
that,
it tries to push it there, but it's not for me.
And that is what... I do think the chunky bass, for real. This chorus, I think, is not bad.
I do think the chorus is alright, yep.
But that's because the song has now shifted into more of an anthemic thing than it was when it started at a very interesting moment.
Yeah. And I won't waste our time, but if you were to play that whole song, you would forget that it was on by halfway through. Completely move on to something else.
But I think that I like the songs that aren't as dark. There are like 4 or 5 bleak songs on here that I really don't like, and I feel like the reason that is because her voice just doesn't fit that style.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she has a very good voice, but it fits more when she's singing something, if not more upbeat, at least more earnest. And fucking God forbid I'd tell her what kind of songs to sing, but it just doesn't feel... It comes off as insincere, and I think that's where the melodrama comment from me stems.
Yeah.
Like, when she sings over those darker arrangements, it seems fake, even if it's not.
I wrote, for instance, Goodbye. Cue the melancholy and surface-level forlornness.
Here's Goodbye.
I did think the chorus was real, though.
Yeah, there's a... I actually want to talk about the piano part in that chorus. This this feels like it could be the solo in a Broadway play, you know? Like, this character has been taking shit all play, and finally they're like, I'm done with you, and they stand, and the spotlight hits the center, and they come out and sing this song. Like, this is I Dreamed a Dream, but, like, modern.
Oh, yeah, maybe without the synth behind it.
Yeah, it just sort of has that feel.
I say you let it ride till the chorus and then even the post-chorus. So let's just really get a feel for this one, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I like this chorus actually quite a bit. Very simple walk up the piano, but effective.
Yep. Yeah, it does get, like I said, it gets a little real here. It gets emotionally, I feel it at that point.
Mm-hmm. You know what? Greg didn't show up to Dharma's art show.
Oh.
And she was pissed. And she walks home alone. And he's, like, right behind her, but they can't quite catch each other. And then, like, he meets her at the door. And then the song has been playing the whole... Like, this is the song that plays out of the montage of Dharma and Greg ending the fight of the episode.
There is, like, a, you know, an alternative influence to this album somewhat. But there's just as much of, like, an electro thing going on.
Yeah.
I've said a number of times.
I actually...
Which is why I'm very confused, because... I guess...
Pausing it.
As we move on from this into the late 2000s and where we are now, the early 2010s or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, you get a much, like, more cohesive mashup of electronic elements with, like, acoustic rock type vibes. Like, Radiohead's killing it in that front.
Absolutely. Sure.
And this is not supposed to be Radiohead whatsoever, but I'm just saying
the moon-shaped pool available in stores everywhere.
This has those elements, but I just think on a production level, not quite able to make them married.
Right. It definitely seems like it came out at a time when the thought was there, like, hey, we might be able to make electronics and rock go together, but they just didn't know what to do with it quite yet.
Yeah.
I know we're jumping around a whole lot, but related to that, track 9, Sunlight, or as I like to call it, the theme from Charmed. Three Sisters. So, like, I just can't unsee that. A little Evanescence-y.
Maybe, yeah. Okay.
But it's kind of got that ever so slight, like, nu metal feel in the guitar. A little bit. It seems like this is the song that they're trying to, like, give her some edge.
Sure.
You know?
I mean, I hear that bass line with a little bit of crunch on it, basically.
Yeah.
If you were so inclined to skip to the end of this song.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's jump to about a minute and a half left.
Most of these songs have fade-outs, which, it's a pop album. Of course they have fade-outs, they don't know how to end a song. Or not, they don't know how, but they don't want to end it, they just fade it out. Everybody loves that, and like you said, made for the radio, same kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think the song could have gotten really fucking awesome from this point, had they kept going. And they just don't do that because it's a pop album and you gotta keep it under, you know, 4 minutes or whatever.
Right.
What's this song called?
This is at 4:59.
Really?
Right.
See, okay, and now...
That, actually, now that you bring that up, we got a 4:59. We got two 4:59s. We got a 4:55, a 4:43, and a 4:41. Only four songs on this album are shorter than 4 minutes.
So they are a little bit longer, okay.
Yeah.
I just thought, like, I hear this melodic content and this kind of thing, and it's like this is finally getting to, like, the kind of realm where I'm interested.
Yeah.
And I want to hear this continue. And then they
right when it gets to the part.
Out.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there it goes. You know, it's just like, oh, come on.
Yeah, that's very true.
And again, fading out, like, on a solo. I don't get that. Like, it's like, this is totally out of the arena here, but, like, Wu-Tang has this song where Ghostface Killah is rhyming. I think it's on Wu-Tang Forever. I forget the name of the song right now. But he's rhyming, and they do a fade-out when he's still spitting his bars. And, like, that's dope because, like, you get the impression that, like, Ghostface could go on forever. And
they just had to cut him off.
Yeah, exactly.
So you don't feel like Natalie Imbruglia and her band could have gone forever there?
I think that they should have. I think that someone was like, okay.
Time to wrap this up.
Yeah, well, I mean, just because of the type of album it is, maybe, you know, if they had that kind of thing, people couldn't. It would be so far removed from her element that it wouldn't fit, you know?
Yeah.
Which is too bad. I think that song could have really rocked.
Yeah.
Harder. It could have gone there for me.
It is. It's interesting, and, like, the lyrics on that song are relatively dark. But, so I would say the melodrama stems from the vocals, like, all of it together when it's trying to be dark. It's melodramatic, but just separating the lyrics from it. Actually, now that I'm looking at these, still pretty melodramatic.
would you play Beauty on Fire?
Beauty on the Fire. This low on the list.
Yeah.
For me as well.
This is the song where I was noticing, like, oh, she's, like, writing about the plight of what it is to be, like, really beautiful and, like, the shit she's gonna put up with. I thought, maybe I'm totally off base. I'm not usually a lyric person, so.
Well, I'll pull them up.
But so this is the first thing where I was like, oh, this isn't gonna be just like a poppy, slightly alternative guitar album.
Yeah.
It's got these synths and the drum loop.
Which now I'm wondering what her first album sounded like.
Right.
I'm wondering if this was the switch into electro territory.
Yeah, was this present or not? I don't know. I mean, like, this is kinda cool. Like, I'd be rocking out in 2002, like, if I heard this on the radio, I think this was kind of dope.
Yeah. And I think that is, for a song released in 2000, for an album released in 2001 and 2, for the worst thing, like, for it to sound dated is not a bad thing. Right?
No.
I mean, it's just a pleasant surprise when sometimes things don't.
Right, exactly. I mean, this is mainstream. I don't think it tried to be anything outside of the mainstream. This is what it is.
Yeah.
But it's like, again, it's like melding elements, but they just don't quite do it right yet.
Yeah, I cannot stop thinking of, like, Buffy when I hear this stuff.
Yeah.
I can just hear any of these songs on Buffy.
Sure. Yeah, that's television of the time.
Yeah. I want to do a lyric anatomy here.
All right.
On track 7. Everything goes. Let's jump ahead.
Are you going to say that they're good or bad? Don't want to pass that kind of judgment.
I have not gotten that far. So.
This is one of the songs where I wrote down a lyric.
Oh, really?
We'll get there. It up.
So here's the thing. A lot of her lyrics are either very cryptic or just aren't trying to say anything.
Yeah.
Like this one.
You live like an island.
So the first chorus starts, because sometimes anything goes when you're looking at me, and sometimes everything goes when you're looking at me. And I don't know if she's celebrating something or mourning it. And so my first thought was, okay, look at the rest of the song. What's the rest of the song saying? And I don't have a goddamn clue.
Oh, shit.
You live your life. Like, at one point she goes, sometimes when you're smiling at me, and I'm like, okay, smiling, that's good. And she goes, you live your life, you live like an island. And I'm like, she can't reach this guy.
Right.
So what is it? I don't know. But hey, maybe that's the point. Maybe good art just is supposed to get a reaction from you. It doesn't matter what it is, right?
Well, we're not plants. Also.
Alright, here it comes. Let's add in how she sings it to maybe get our answer. I can't tell. Ooh, what minor right there? There's nothing there to dig for.
I'm not sure. I can't tell. Because you're right. It's. Is it stepping on either side of that line, like, mindfully? Like, is it. Is
yeah, maybe it wants us to us? Maybe it wants us to think it's both. So we get whatever we want out of it.
I'm honestly willing to give Natalie the credit on that one and just say
that. She was fucking with us.
She was playing that angle.
You go,
she
Natalie.
Did it well. Nice job, Natalie.
You go, Natalie. You got a fan in one of us. Sorry about Kyle.
Hey, now I.
you have been
in that light. I can accept that.
You've done some pretty good devil's advocate work. I do appreciate that. What is your favorite song on this album?
My favorite song.
We have established that the hit replicant is likely Wrong Impression.
Right. I guess. I guess maybe Goodbye.
Okay.
Not even true. There's just nothing that I really liked. I just thought the lyrics were, like, really bad, and
all right.
I didn't really like anything.
That's fair enough.
If I was gonna say, if I had to pick, I would say maybe Beauty on Fire, On the Fire.
Beauty on the Fire.
Or Wrong Impression.
Okay.
Wrong
Impression, my favorite.
Okay.
Come September, the Closer, number two.
Oof. Okay.
A lot of Sarah Bareilles in there. I'm a noted Sarah Bareilles fanatic. And then Goodbye at number three. Least favorite track. 12-way tie?
Yeah, most of them are tied. Basically any of the ones that I didn't just mention are tied for last.
Yeah.
Again, like, it's not even that some of them are downright bad. It's just that I just got really bored listening to them.
That's fair. I hated that day. Opened with a horrible song. Probably going to cut together a different edit of the album that I can throw in to personalize it.
I think maybe Hurricane, I would say.
I don't remember that one, so.
Hurricane was probably my least favorite song.
Okay.
I was the most sarcastic in my notes here.
So we'll close it with the question we always ask. Would you listen to it again?
Would I listen to it again? Yes. I would.
Really?
I would, in order to examine it further.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would you recommend it to other people?
No.
No?
Absolutely not.
All right.
You?
Yeah, I would listen to it again. I mean, I already listened to it a third time of my own volition.
Okay.
And I would recommend it to other people if I knew. This always is dependent on their taste. But if they like pop music and they're open about that, I would probably say yes.
Okay. All right.
So, all right.
Do you have a song that you'd like to close with? Because I do.
I will defer to you then.
I think you should play Talk in Tongues.
Talk in Tongues?
It flirts with being a stripped-down acoustic number, but then it's not. And it's actually got a mellotron on it. I'm pretty sure that's a mellotron doing the flute sound. And so I'm going to say actually one of the more interesting songs.
Musically. Cool. Well, we'll definitely close with Talk in Tongues. Before we get to that, do you have any thoughts before we get out of here?
I appreciate the listeners. I've been having a lot of fun doing this. I've been listening to music that I would never have listened to for the show.
Yeah.
I'm excited for... I'm glad that I've been listening to the these albums that are totally different, looking at the music from a way, an angle that I've not looked at them before. And I'm just excited to hear some more.
Hell yeah. Well, rate us on iTunes, review us, subscribe, all that stuff that every show tells you to do. Thanks again for listening. Next week, we'll be back with Michael Allison.
Michael Allison. We're going to talk about the guys that sing Blue Dabba Dee.
Yep, Eiffel 65 next week on One Hit Wonderful World. We'll leave you with track 10 off of 2002's White Lily's Island by Natalie Imbruglia, Talk in Tongues. Thank you very much. Have a good night. I don't need to listen to that.
When you beat on that drum, talking that tongue, you're just scratching on the surface. So tell me what it means. I whisper to a scream, slowly fades away. Then you wake up, and tomorrow is today. And you're crying, crying like a baby, caught between the tides. Did you lose your way? You lost your way. Did you lose your way? You lost your way. Do you know? Crying like a baby, caught between the tides.